Very warm welcome to K-Scope, the post-progressive podcast. Billy Reeves here. Stephen Wilson has a new album out, The Raven That Refused to Sing and Other Stories, and it's amazing. We'll hear an exclusive extended interview with Stephen direct from his rehearsal room after this, the title track.
Sister, I lost you when you were still a child, but I lead you now, and I lead out from a lie. I'm afraid to wait. I'm afraid to love. We'll be right back.
The Raven That Refused to Sing. Watch Jessica Cope's heartrending animated video which accompanies this piece at kscopemusic.com/Stephen Wilson. Stephen and the artist Heijo Muller wrote the story, and Jessica has beautifully brought it to life. Stephen very kindly invited me down to a rehearsal recently as he and his band get ready for the tour. I started by asking him if the writing of this album was done with the current personnel in mind.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote it very much with these musical personalities in mind. It's very much a band record, and it was also written very much off the back of having toured with these guys and the kind of chemistry that developed between their styles. So that kind of gave me a very strong direction. Having a direction sometimes is a good thing, sometimes it's not. Sometimes, and the last album, I didn't have a direction. I just kind of wrote music, and I ended up with I'm talking about Grace for Drowning now. I ended up with an album that was kind of a little bit all over the place, but in a way I really liked, you know. But something about this record has a much more cohesion, and it has much more of a sense of unity. All the tracks kind of seem like they belong together, and that's partly because it's the same band cutting the same record in the same room in the same week. It was kind of an intimate atmosphere. We could all sort of look across the room and see each other, look each other in the eyes. I think you can kind of pick up a little bit on that on the record.
But there must have been obviously a huge amount of planning. I mean, the credits of the album suggest, okay, it was recorded in a week, then there was a day of strings, then there was some mucking about with a mellotron, and that was it. But presumably there was an enormous amount of planning went into it.
Demos are included in the special edition. You can hear the demos. They're very specific, you know, so the guys could listen to those demos. In fact, some of them contributed to the demos too, but even if they didn't, they could listen to those demos and they could know pretty much exactly what the structure is, exactly what the arrangement was supposed to be, not necessarily exactly what notes I wanted them to play, because actually the one thing that was completely open was whenever one of those guys stepped up to play a part or take a solo, That's their voice you're listening to. That's not my voice.
Yeah, because I wondered how musicians, specifically this lot of musicians, are an extraordinary bunch of musicians, is how much they like being told, OK, this is what you're supposed to be doing, and how much they like the freedom to solo. Do they like order, or do they like freedom?
Great musicians like doing all sorts of things. You know, it's like when people ask me, you know, what do you prefer to do? Do you prefer to make records? Do you prefer to tour? And the point is that actually part of what I love about my job is that it is like this cyclical seasonal thing. You know, I spend a few months in the studio. I spend a few months promoting the record, talking one-on-one to people like I am now to you. And then I spend a few months playing, meeting 1,000 people every day when I go. So that, and then you go back to the studio and you're right back on your own again. So, and I think for musicians, it's the same. They love to do, I mean, these guys, they love to go out and play improv gigs, you know, jazz gigs, but at the same time they like to work within very structured material. I think the bottom line is, as long as they feel they can still express themselves. The one thing I didn't want to do is say play these notes exactly like this, because what's the point, you know? What's the point of having
a bunch of robots,
you know? Exactly.
Is there a sense of mischief though sometimes, if you're thinking, okay, I've got you know, you and I've spoken about this, about you wanting to get better and better and better, that you therefore, is it a case of sometimes you're a little bit mischievous maybe, if you're thinking, okay, let them try this,
right,
towards the denouement of The Watchmaker, right? I'm thinking, if that had been me, I'd think, okay, come on lads, see if you can play this. Is there a sense of mischief, or is it you pushing yourself?
I wouldn't say it's the latter.
Right.
I was pushing myself to write things that perhaps are beyond me as a musician to play.
Uh-huh.
I can hear them in my head. And one thing that's great about knowing that you have people that can play stuff that you yourself couldn't play is it does push you. You know, perhaps think of things that you could only think of. You couldn't actually physically produce them yourself. This album is being very well received, and people say to me, they almost ask me the question, the implication sometimes is, did you intend to make a really good record this time? As if I don't do that every time, you know. And I realise that obviously some records kind of tend to resonate better with more people than others. And this record, for whatever reason, seems to be really connecting.
Yeah, did they perhaps mean make a more commercial record this time? Which isn't particularly...
No, because I don't think it is. I think there's a sense that some people are saying to me, well done for, you know, making a record, a really good record, you know, as if, because maybe they didn't dig Grace for Drowning so much, they didn't dig the Stormcrows record.
Right. Interesting.
And the implication is somehow that I've made this decision to make a better record than I did last time. But of course, that's absurd. You know, I always set out to make a record that I'm completely 100% believing.
It's a very pretty record, this record, Stephen.
Is it? Yes. I mean,
its awkward bits, but it's very pretty generally.
I haven't really analysed too much. It's a little bit more old school. It kind of nods itself a bit more to the old, the 70s kind of era, a little bit more obviously perhaps than the previous records.
Yeah. Well, that dovetails nicely into my next question, actually, because I'm going to try and ask you the most pompous question you've ever been asked ever in your entire career now. Right, let's do it.
Okay. The bar pretty high.
I work for the BBC. I've got a friend who works for Moorfields Eye Hospital. The two of us were talking about you the other day because we both know your work. And we were discussing the fact that the groups that you liked when you were growing up are exceptional musicians, exceptional music, progressive music. And I was wondering, therefore, if the three of us, me at the BBC, her at the Moorfields Eye Hospital, and you, see ourselves, therefore, as part of this continuum of excellence, that you have taken the ball from those people and say, OK, if I've been influenced by these people, I've got to try and make a record that's as good as the records that I grew up with. Do you, therefore, see yourself as a progressive musician as part of a continuum of excellence?
It's a very, very pompous question. Congratulations.
Hooray! Yeah.
Well, but it's a good one. I think the continuum of excellence is the pretentious part. But it's good. But I know exactly what you mean. Yes and no. I will elaborate. Don't worry. I know exactly what you mean, and the answer is yes. I do feel that there is something about that era that was very, very special, and I feel to an extent that it is a little bit of a lost art. The way people made records then. The ambition, the experimentation, the lack of the fearlessness in regard to being overreaching or pretentious or ambitious. All the things that people can sort of use to damn this kind of music, for me, are also the things that are great about it. Yeah. It is pretentious, it is overreaching, it is ambitious, it's kind of reaching for the stars, and sometimes that means you fall flat on your face. And I love that about the early 70s era of musicians, not just from the scene that we're talking about, but also from the worlds of jazz, singer-songwriter music, even pop. You know, some of the pop music from the 70s still sounds extraordinarily unique when compared to the kind of generic banality of modern popular music. So I think, yes, the answer to your question. But the other side of me says, I don't want to be living in the shadow of anything. And although my music has obviously got references back to the past, and indeed there is no music that does not.
Yeah, of course.
There is no music that does not have references back to the past. And I wonder if ever it was the case that actually all music, I mean, even, you know, we sometimes sort of look on bands like the Beatles and Led Zeppelin as if they came out of a vacuum. And of course, nothing could be further from the truth. You know, they both stole shamelessly from previous eras of music. And I think the same is true now. But at the same time, I don't like the idea that the music is simply, a nostalgic homage to... It is that. It has got elements of that. But it also, I think, is the kind of record that could only have been made by me in 2012.
Yes, because the stuff that you're influenced by, terrible phrase, the stuff that you're referencing, your words, was moving forward, and so are you. So it's almost like you're not... I don't mean for one minute to suggest it's looking backwards. It's pretentious in that it's the fun side of pretentious and ambitious and awkward. But the pleasure of listening to your music and music like it is you don't quite know what's going to happen next, which is great. It's unsettling, it's groovy, it's pretty. It's like, you know, like life, as it were, if I am being pretentious. Was there a frustration for those guys, and you've met a lot of those people, is there a frustration for you thinking, OK, I've got to move forward, I've got to be better? Is there a frustration that you can't do that, or do you believe you are doing that, that you are moving forward and moving that sort of music forward?
No, I hope so. I think you know, in some cases, as I say, you cannot possibly hope to create music that is completely futuristic, so to speak. You have to kind of nod to the past. I didn't grow up in the 70s. I grew up at a later time.
Yeah.
I grew up listening to The Cure and Joy Division and Magazine.
There's elements of that in your music as well.
I think there is. Mm. And then I grew up listening to Aphex Twin and Squarepusher, and I loved electronic music. And I think, you know, to lesser or greater degree, those things manifest in some albums more than others. Probably less so on this record. But nevertheless, I think that sensibility is there.
I think it's simpatico. You know, because I think because those groups obviously grew up listening to those groups.
Of course, of course. Although they weren't allowed to say so at the time.
No, exactly.
But of course they did. You know, I think we maybe talked about this before that when I hear Joy Division now, I hear more Pink Floyd than I do Sex Pistols. Totally.
They were Steve Morris, the drummer of Joy Division's favourite band was Whitesnake.
Right. You go. But he would never have said that at the time. No. They were only allowed to name check Bowie and Roxy Music and Can and Velvet Underground. That was about it. You weren't allowed to say you'd grown up with Yes and Genesis and Pink Floyd, even though you had. And it was clearly here, you know, audible in the music. So I think that luckily that kind of, I think that's gone now. One of the great things about the era that we live in is that actually it's no longer necessary to try and tow the line that the music press would like you to tow, because the music press have no influence anymore.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah. So therefore, are we in a bit of a golden era? Because let's just get my head around what you actually under exclusive license mean. Are you the venture capitalist on this record? You organise everything. You pay for the musicians. You pay for the studio, and then it's licensed through the label, who do the marketing and the manufacturing. So essentially, you're in control.
Yes, I make the record pretty much in a vacuum. I don't listen to what anyone else may, and that includes what the expectations of the fans may be, the expectations of the record company may be, the expectations of the management. And I don't mean to say that in a kind of pompous way. You know, like, I'm an artist, I don't compromise. I'm incapable of making a record in under any other circumstances. And I realised this about myself a long time ago. Very near the beginning of my career, I realised that I couldn't do this. I couldn't. And actually, because of that, my career has been a kind of war of attrition. It's been a very gradual...
Well, it's been a long one.
It's been a long one. But it's still. But the thing is, it's still kind of edging ever upwards. But at a kind of snail's rate. A few more records there, a few more people coming to the shows. And part of the reason it's been slow but gradual is that I have found it incapable of doing what was expected. And I think actually, grudgingly, that eventually earns you respect from the rest of the industry. But the kind of music I make, whatever you call it, it's the kind of music that, generally speaking, people still want to own physical product.
Valid,
and they still want to sit down and listen to an album from beginning to end. The kind of music I make, and Marillion make, incidentally, people are not interested in just a five-minute chunk. They want the album experience. And that kind of plays really nicely into our hands, because it means that we can still make these records and people still want to buy them.
What can people expect from these shows? Because presumably there's a large repertoire now. Well, oldies and newies?
The new album. We're playing the new album. All six of the pieces we're playing.
Right.
Not in a big bunch in the show, but spread out throughout the show. So in terms of repertoire, obviously the new record, and a smattering of tracks from the first two records.
Are they transmogrified at all?
I think they're always in a sort of state of flux, because these guys are in my back. Well, I have a new guitar player, firstly, Guthrie Govan, who's an extraordinary player.
Yes, mate, that's a very nice man. Yeah.
He's lovely, and he's an extraordinary talent. And he will, of course, he will immediately give a different kind of complexion to those. And there's a lot of improvisation in the show. I mean, one of the things that I was very keen on, coming out of the Porcupine Tree situation into this situation, was that I didn't want the shows to be so set in stone. So in that respect, every show is unique. We have new films, we have some new production ideas and things, but generally speaking, I kind of set the template for the kind of show I wanted to do with the Grace of Drowning tour. So this is hopefully taking that up to the next level.
constant surface to an unquenchable ghost. The night gives birth, the devil rises from right out of the earth.
Stephen Wilson, The Holy Drinker, from The Raven That Refused to Sing and Other Stories, out now on K-Scope. Details and videos at kscopemusic.com/Stephen Wilson. The 2013 tour dates are on there too. Stephen and his band start in Manchester. I'll see you at the Royal Festival Hall in London on March the 4th. The band then travel through mainland Europe before heading to the US in mid-April, including a show with Opeth and Catatonia in Albany, New York on the 28th of April. All details at kscopemusic.com/Stephen Wilson. Thanks very much, as ever, for listening to the K-Scope podcast. Do share it with your friends. kscopemusic.com/podcast. Next month, I'm pleased to say, is a special with Amplifier, whose new album Echo Street will be released on K-Scope on March the 11th. Follow us on Twitter at kscopemusic. I'm Billy Reeves. Speak to you soon.